At Disability Rights Arkansas, we are focused on guidance for people with disabilities on how to navigate your rights, things that help with your everyday life, and how to navigate the complex systems of how to get the support you need. In this podcast, we bring that information directly to you, the listener, on things like accessibility questions, career and care, and even the nuances of love life with a disability. I'm your host, Lainey Jennings Hall. There is a stigma around people with disabilities. Many believe that people with disabilities don't deserve a family life, or maybe they can't handle it. I'm joined today by Julie Petty, a wife, a mom, and a strong self-advocate who is here to break down that stigma. Julie, thank you for joining me today.
Hi, Lane.
So we're going to jump right in. Julie, would you mind talking to us a little bit about your background?
Sure. My name is Julie Petty, and I am a self-advocate for disability justice. And I've been in Arkansas now for over 25 years. I'm married to my husband, Brian, for 22 years. And we have two sons, a senior in high school and a freshman in college.
So what do you do with your role?
At Partners for Inclusive Communities, I am a project trainer. I work on sexual violence prevention, and then we also support crime victims with disabilities. Anybody who has been abused or hurt by a crime, that's why I support them, because we find that peer-to-peer support is the best.
Absolutely. I think, you know, there's no better way than the peer-to-peer support. Today, I really want to talk about that. In fact, I want to talk about your advocacy efforts, and I want to talk about your rights, your family life, because Julie, you do it all. You have been a strong self-advocate, and you've got this amazing family life. Let's just talk about your family. What is a day in the life of Julie?
Well, if you would have asked me that 7 or 8 years ago, it would have been a lot different than now. Since my boys that are young men, a day in the life of our family has evolved. You know, used to, every afternoon, I would either be at a soccer game, or music lessons, or I used to be very, very busy. But now that my boys are young men, they're pretty independent. So, and I work from home, so it was nice to be able to raise the kids and work from home. It made it more flexible for me to be here with them.
You talked about, you know, over the last few years, it's changed a little bit. Let's go back even a few more years. How did you meet your husband?
That's debatable. He had a story, and I have a story.
It's typically how it goes, right? I feel like that everybody has their own side of how it all started, right?
My story is we met in college at the University of Arkansas. We were the journalism majors. So that's how I met him.
So, Julie, I want to get a little bit personal here. There is a stigma, and I'm sure you're very well aware, that people with disabilities may not, and I don't agree with this, but there is a stigma that people with disabilities, you know, aren't going to have a family life. They may not have kids. How do you go about advocating that this is not true? Like, how did you advocate that this is what you wanted? On you were gonna have a family, you were gonna have kids, you des- not just that you were going to, that you deserved this right.
Well, you are right. The one stigma behind people with disabilities having children, and me and Brian just talked about it and talked about what it would look like and what type of support I would need, which might be a little bit more support than a non-disabled mom. But I think we all have things we have to think about before we have kids. So I just wanted to make sure Brian knew this was a partnership. I needed his help, especially I think every mom is scared at first when they bring their newborn home, and some people thought I shouldn't have kids, even some of my family members. They thought, how will she be able to take care of them? That another big stereotype. So, like I said, they're grown young men now, so I don't think we did a good job.
And Julie, how did you have those conversations when you had your own family doubting that? Because I know that there are people that are facing that. You did it. I mean, you've got your kiddos are in college, right?
One of them, yes. The other one is going next year.
That's amazing. So you guys have done it. How did you have those conversations with those people that doubted you? How did you say, like, we're going to do this? How did you handle those conversations?
So the people who doubted me, I really didn't get into a conversation with them. I just talked to Brian about it. And he was my number one supporter. And eventually, after the boys got older, the doubters, I think their doubts went away.
Julie, I think that is so powerful. Like, you didn't even have to have the conversation. You showed them through your actions. And I think that, I don't know if there's anything more powerful that you can say about that. And I didn't prepare this question for you, and I apologize, but I feel like the conversation is kind of moving this direction. How do you have the conversation with your kiddos to teach them to be empowering and be their own advocates as well, and to be allies? How are you furthering this movement, really?
So I would have to say both of my boys are great advocates and allies, you know, since they were younger, because I am a mom with a disability. I taught them stuff around the house at an earlier age. When they became old enough, they would help me around the house. We would go shopping. I remember one time I took my oldest to Walmart, he was about 7, and he asked me why people were staring. And I said, because you're so beautiful. So, they are great allies. They help me make dinner. They help me clean around the house. I mean, now that they're teenagers, they don't want to do that stuff. But
yeah, I understand that.
Yeah.
Well, and I love even in that right there, you led by action. Not, you didn't even have to explain. Like, you never said, anything. You just led by action right there of it's because you're beautiful. Like, I absolutely love that, Julie.
Well, they just don't know any different, you know? And when they were between kindergarten and the sixth grade, they both went to the same school. So I knew all the teachers. I knew all their friends. I got really involved in the PTO, the parent teacher organization. So I felt very accepted in their school life because that was one of my goals, to support them at school. You know, my Brian, he had other roles in our family. One of my roles was to support the boys through school. So
let's talk about that a little bit, because you said Brian is your husband, correct?
Yes.
It sounds like you guys are each other's support system, which is wonderful. How do you guys just divide up your family roles? It sounds like y'all have a pretty good system working.
Well, there are certain things I do not like to do because of my disability. It takes me 10 times longer to do it than Brian whenever I would be making dinner. So I did cook more when the boys were younger, but I did not like folding laundry. So the boys have been doing their own laundry since they were young. I know people in college who don't even know how to do the laundry. So,
well, I know the rule in my household is Logan has to do his own laundry anyway, because I swear guys are just, they're just stank. So I think the men should have to do their own laundry anyway. Julie, so what I'm hearing is you're having the exact same conversations every single family has.
Yes.
So the stigma that exists, it shouldn't, because you're having the same conversations, you're creating your support system, you're having the same worries. It's family life, right?
It is. There is not a lot of difference, but because I am a national reader and I've been able to travel all over the nation, and usually sometimes I take my family. So my boys have been around every type of disability around the nation. And so they have a different mindset than people in the South do. And I'm sorry to say that, but it's true. People in the South treat me differently than when I go to D.C. or when I go to Oregon. So I really wish that people were not scared of what they don't know, you know?
No, I think you're exactly right. And I think this mindset shift is becoming a reoccurring theme on these interviews with the podcast. So I think you're hitting it spot on.
I just wanted to add, and when Brian looks at me, he doesn't see my disability. He sees his wife, the mother of the kids. You know, he doesn't focus on my disability.
Exactly.
He's the best ally. He's the best ally I've ever had.
That goes right to it's family life. You need your spouse to be your ally, your supporter. And I think that's key. And a right that you have. So Julie, I think my last question for you really is, do you have any advice that you would offer to empower other self-advocates so that they feel and acknowledge that they have the right to family life.
I thought a lot about this question, and I feel everyone has the right to have a family, but everyone has to decide for themselves. And family can look different for everyone. So I always like to say being a mom is the best job, but it's the hardest job.
I don't think that you could have said it any better.
The one thing I didn't share under our daily struggles and challenges, as a family, when we do go out to eat or out to a movie, we experience ableism. Ableism is the belief or attitude that people with disabilities can't do everything like everybody else. This discussion today that shows that is not true. So that my boys and Brian, they totally get ableism. They see it when they're with me. So
can I ask how your boys and husband handle that when that happens at a restaurant or maybe at school or wherever you may deal with that?
So at school, I have a couple of stories. My youngest son, he knows that I'm very particular on the language that we use when we talk about people with disabilities. So one time at lunch, this boy was using the word handicapped. And my son turned around and said, "You know, people with disabilities don't use that word." And the boy was like, "How do you know? Do you know someone with disability?" And my son was like, "My mom." So he was
good
like,
for him.
Yeah. But Brian, he notices people stare at us. So this is kind of cheesy, but he came up with a phrase that he said to me, "Professor, we have another subject, disabilities and behavior." So,
leave it to the man. Did you do this? I love it. Well, it's like one uses as a tool for education, and you got to have kind of the times to lap. There are times. There are different ways to handle it. I love that.
But my oldest son had senior night last year, and at senior night, he did not want me to walk with him on the field because he knew people would make fun of me. So I told Logan, "I respect your decision, and I know you're just trying to protect me." So I didn't get to walk with Logan on senior night.
That hurts my heart for you. Just so I have a 3-year-old and I'm experiencing mom life for the very first time. And so I know all those little moments are very precious.
But this year I got to walk with my son Warren, and they are, they have two different personalities. So, I mean, Warren doesn't care what people do. And as you heard from the story, he would tell them where to go. Well, I'm not where to go, but
it'll be educating as he walking down the aisle.
So, okay. Well, thank you for letting me share about ableism.
Thank you, Julie, for bringing up that point on ableism. I think it's really important. And to our listeners, I do want to highlight the importance of using people-first language So for example, rather than saying disabled or wheelchair bound, considering using words like people with disabilities or person using a wheelchair, remember that the person comes first. I'll make sure to drop a link to a really great resource that can be found on our website in the show notes.
Well, thank you so much, Julie. I really appreciate this conversation.
You're welcome. I hope I was able to educate and share some knowledge.
At DRA, we envision an Arkansas where people with disabilities are equal members in their communities and can dictate their lives through self-determination. And as made clear in today's episode, we can't create that change without bringing self-advocates to the table. If you're interested in more information, make sure to subscribe to this podcast and visit our website.